collective resistance against unjust debts. Again, at Saturday, July 12th at 3 p.m. in Holiday Park. More information may be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're tuned to KBOO Portland 90.7. Up next is Art Focus with host Ava Lake. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from B Space Movement and Expressive Arts Studio, hosting the Life Art Being Integrative Arts Festival, a week of practicing presence with the self, the body, and earth, July 7th through 12th at B Space and Portlandia Shambhala Center. Life Art Being includes authentic movement, Shambhala art, deep ecology practices, and more. Information at b-space.org/lifeartbeing.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream.
Good morning. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. My name is Ava Lake. Hi, how are you today? Today I have with me a guest who has an exhibition. It's actually a project that's been going on for a while and will continue. Exhibitions are kind of splintered off too, like there might be parts here and there. For instance, I know that there's some that's happening at the Outside Inn right now and also at the Friendly House in Northwest Portland. My guest today is Teresa Weil, and the show is called Because She Cares, yes?
Yes, it is.
And do you have, just for the listener, you have a website for this?
Sure.
Where can they find information?
It's becausheshecares.org.
All right, easy. And well, it's a portrait project, yes?
Yes. It was kind of a philanthropic project that I started in 2011, actually. And I wanted to honor my women mentors in my life growing up and also honor what women do here in the state. So I came up with this idea and started emailing different women leaders of nonprofits across the state of Oregon.
And some of these you had known, right? Like, for instance, the way I got to this project or learned about this project of yours was through KBOO. You had done a portrait of Monica here, yes?
Yes, I have. And I really got to know Monica from the project. I had known about Sisters of the Road, her previous job, and I was very attracted to that that charity. And the other piece of this project was to represent women who take care of different aspects of our society, different groups, different people in need.
So in a nutshell, these are all portraits of women who are heading, they're leaders, and they're working in nonprofits.
Correct.
And it's also all over the state, right?
Yes, it started out, I finished the project in the end of 2013, and the debut exhibit was in Salem in February, where in the month of February, five of the portraits were hung in Elizabeth Steiner Hayward's office, the senator, and she chose people from her district. And there were five women from her district. And she got a lot of great comments. And it was just a really great day. I had the gallery. I rented the Galleria. And it was an all-day thing. And I got to go on the Senate floor. And it was very exciting.
So, you know, this to me is so obvious with your project, but something that I tell people all the time, my philosophy about art is not an object, it is a conversation. And it seems to me your project is really exemplifies that, right?
Yeah, I think I was looking for a way of connecting with my community, but also looking for a way to do a kind of, if you will, my own private sort of like college course or higher education. So I've learned a lot about nonprofit organizations and I've met a lot of people. But the whole project stemmed from a book that I started reading called Original American Women Artists. And the other part of this project is to really raise the awareness that women artists are always underrepresented. And for my part, I felt like if I did a large body of work, that would represent me as an artist who's serious, who's a woman artist who really deserves recognition and deserves to be taken seriously. And I think that through time in the 50s, you know, the women had a boycott in New York City because men were the only artists getting shows.
Mm-hmm.
And really now women art, women's product or their artwork sells for considerably less than male artists. And, you know, part of my own drive to do this was to help change that and to kind of mentor that for young women.
So I'm hearing several things here. So first of all, this project is about other women who are in leadership roles, but it's and having us just look at them and honor them and get their story and see their image. But this is also about you and putting yourself up there also as the woman artist, the leader who is. So in a way, you're sort of joining that group and encouraging conversation around women in power.
Correct.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
So there is so much that we could talk on this. But one thing I wanted to ask you is looking at your artist, looking at some of the statements around the work, you kind of believe, or it seems you believe, that we're especially generous, that, you know, you're looking at female generosity. I'm pretty sure that's actually something I can quote out of your stuff, female generosity. Talk to us about that. Why is that? How is that? Do you really believe that?
Yes, I do. And my earliest mentors were my great Italian aunts who worked in the New York sewing factories when ready-made clothes were just taking hold. And you know, they had limited education, but, you know, like one of my aunts would give an in-between payday loan to a coworker who needed it. And another one of my aunts had her own dress shop. And if a woman came in and needed a dress for her wedding, she would work with her. And they were so generous with me. They were my first teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that, you know, that's the tribal nature of women. And that also the generosity kind of dovetails with nurturing. Mm-hmm. And I see that these women and all these nonprofits, that's what they're doing all day.
That's what they're doing. But is this cultural? This is not genetic.
I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah. All right. I just kind of wonder, because sometimes I get a little like, if it's genetic, then that's a whole another part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about a little bit about the work itself.
Sure.
Because when I first saw the images, I thought they were paintings, but they're not paintings. So tell us what we're looking at when we look at one of your portraits.
Okay. It's kind of a technique I started. And the way I started it is I started doing self-portraits. And I got a lot of, that hung in my house. And I got a lot of great comments. So I thought, well, why don't I try doing other people?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came up with this idea, I said, this is a good way to craft this particular process that I do, which is the portraits are made entirely out of cut paper. There's no painting.
Mm-hmm.
So even like the irises and the eyelashes, everything is made out of cut paper.
The prints of the clothing and all of that. And all of that's cut? Every single bit?
Well,
or are you finding paper that's
some
got
of
the patterns?
In the clothes, some of the patterns are on the paper.
And nice.
And as an artist, you know, you are the director of where somebody looks at your art. So I kept the clothes kind of less decorative and mm-hmm. less mosaiced. And I really worked on the face
mm-hmm.
because that's really what I wanted the viewer to see.
Mm-hmm. Just want to remind you again that you can see Teresa's artwork at, Friendly House in Northwest Portland and also Outside In right now, yes?
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Okay. So when we're seeing this, I think from a distance, it maybe looks like a gouache or something like that.
It's, or a watercolor.
Or a watercolor.
Yeah.
But it is, talk to us about how do you do it? Are you drawing first? How does it happen?
Well, how it happens is I either take a picture of the person or they supply it. A picture, and I take I create a line drawing,
mm-hmm.
and from that becomes my kind of, as it were, going back to the sewing, which I sewed when I was young because of my mentors. It becomes my pattern,
uh-huh.
and from that's my jumping off point. And so I work on board,
uh-huh.
and I use an X-Acto knife. And most of the all the paper come from art stores and are acid free, so they're high quality. And I have certain shops, like I have a store up in Seattle I love, and you know, I've kind of found places that really sell great paper, and that's where I get my materials. And then I use a matte medium, which is kind of like a gel, but it kind of disappears.
Yeah, and that's how you glue it down?
Yeah.
Does it stay flat, or does it wrinkle a little?
No, it stays flat.
Oh, I'm going to have to check that
out. And really what it is it's a building up. So like on a face, there's a background piece.
Okay.
And then there is, on top of that are the features. And they get just, it just gets built up. So it really is, has kind of an elevation to it.
Uh-huh.
And for this show, everything's covered in glass because they've been moving a lot and I want them to be protected. But I really think the best way to have this kind of art in your home is to have it on a in a floating frame without glass over it, because you can really enjoy the texture of it.
How long is it? I guess, I don't know, maybe the length of time to make something is not so important as like what kind of changes do you go through as you make it? Because I see this as something where you wake up, because you're gluing as you go, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like, for instance, when I make a collage, I set it all out and it's then it's done. You know what I mean? Then I have to glue it. You have, it's almost like a painting process in which you react.
Exactly. And it really has evolved. And that the other piece, which I didn't mention, is sort of educational for people who want to do any kind of art, in that the first portrait I did of Kathy Oliver and the last portrait, you can see a difference in the technique. And it's really about the seeing. You know, as you do something more and more, you see more and more that you want to add in.
Oh,
And so, I've had certain, I really like doing lips, but noses, you know, sometimes they go really easy, and other times, you know, I can spend a couple of days on a nose because it's just not, you know, it's just not representative of the person's nose.
Yeah.
So you end up, just like anything you do a lot, you have favorite parts and not so favorite parts. And,
right.
Yeah.
So how, and do they look like you? Would you say they do look like your people?
I think they do.
Visitor?
Yeah. And one of my friends said, in a way, it's kind of like I can be a plastic surgeon because she's...
Make my nose smaller, please.
Yeah. We don't do double chins and, you know. But they look great. You know, I think they're great. I think I've only had one person who didn't like their portrait. And you
talk to us about that, because I used to sit for people all the time, and you know, sometimes it's like, is that me? You know, like, so what happened, and what how does that feel?
Well, I think it really goes back to being in your own power. And that this is just an expression in time of what you've done. Mm. And it's too bad the person doesn't like it. But, you know, I kind of go back to some reading I did on Picasso. And it's like, you know, his thing was he didn't care what anyone thought.
Heck no.
Right.
That's right.
So
that's
in
the
that
attitude.
In that way, you know, once that happened, I said, you know, I'm not sharing any ones that I've finished. I'm just going to keep working, and then everyone will see the whole body of work. You know, I don't need individual validation. And in that way, that was kind of a learning curve for me.
That is so great to hear. So, you know, kind of riffing on the because she cares or whatever.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us want to be liked. Women are sort of especially trained to be liked. Mm. And then when you get into portraiture, you do kind of ride that line of will they like it? So that's more important than if you'd painted a landscape. So I think it's great. Like, you're making this work because you have to make this work not to necessarily please or be pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And I think as an artist, too, when you look back on some of your work, you say, oh, I could have done that a little different. I could have done that a little different. But, you know, when I'm doing a portrait, I'm really in the zone and I'm just really in kind of just taking the creativity in the universe and just working that into what I'm doing. And it's just so pleasurable. I mean, I feel so fortunate that I can use my hands every day. And I feel like that is something that's kind of passing out of influence in our world.
Well, it's true. You know, there's sort of a battle, and maybe even especially here in Oregon, about craft. You know, like, do we use it or do we not? Does it matter? Do, you know, and those kinds of things. And some people complain about the emphasis or overemphasis, the hand of the artist, all of those things. But you said they still matter.
Yeah, I think they matter. And actually, my work kind of rides that line of craft or art, you know, and I think that artists and curators kind of do a disservice when they kind of diss craft, because I think it's really an expression of art.
Well, I remember having Judy Cook on the radio once, and I said, I asked her, well, you teach a lot. What do you want them to take away? What's the issue for you? And she says, form. No matter how important their ideas are, no matter how much, how attached they are to their ideas, they're going to have to wrestle with form, which is a little bit going back to what you were saying.
Right.
So just letting you know, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Art Focus, and my name is Ava Lake. If you want more information about this show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus and see links to past interviews. I've been here about 5 years, and I'm sharing the show with Joseph Gallivan these days, which is so fabulous. He's joined us, and he's helping us all a lot. So today I have with me Teresa Weil. She's got an exhibition called Because She Cares. And this is actually something that's been, I mean, all over the state. Where, what are your plans with it moving forward?
Okay, it's going to be at the Unitarian Church in full in September.
Nice. That'd be the first time, right? That it's all together and all together?
No, it was in Salem all together and then in Bend.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's...
So are we talking about the Unitarian Church downtown?
Yeah.
How many portraits all together?
24.
24. Mm-hmm. And you have now, you've finished the project?
Yeah. I finished it in the end of 2013.
Uh-huh.
And one other thing that I've learned about this, I just I have an online monthly newsletter. How many great people have come to help me with this? You know, like I had to raise money for framing and raise money for different things. And I've partnered with one of the charities, Northwest Down Syndrome, instead of going to like Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I raise money and I give them a percentage.
Nice.
So that's really been great. The partnerships and the different relationships and the knowledge that I've gained from this is something that, you know, is priceless.
Well, also though, Teresa, aren't you doing a thing where you're going to auction them off and give them all to the charities? Or what's the plan on that?
I would like to do that. In the beginning, I really wanted to have a big event in the end. And right now, I'm just kind of doing that privately because... Mm-hmm. I really don't have the bandwidth to do, you know, have a big event and all that without getting corporate sponsors. So I haven't really pursued that. But I have done something really exciting in June with the help of Portland Creative Media. I filmed Monica and four other honorees, and I'm creating a film that will show during the exhibit.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about that. And I have a great woman director, Joni DeRoshi. And so
you're working on that right now?
Yeah. Oh. I'm working on that now. And then the final exhibit will be at the 501 Art Space in Lake Oswego as, you know, a great opportunity given to me by the Lake Oswego Arts Council. So that'll be the Swan Song exhibit.
When's that?
That's the end of October, and the artist reception is November 7th. And I'm planning to have the film show throughout the time there.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And the website also, just to remind everyone, is becausheshecares.org, yes? Yes?
A-R-G.
Okay.
O-R-G.
O-R-G. All right. So I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Why aren't you painting? I mean, what led you down... Because you did paint, yes?
Yes, I do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I'm not the same way, and there's a complicated reason for why I'm not painting now, but I'd like to hear yours.
Yeah, it's kind of a, it's a curse and a blessing to like to do a lot of different things when you're an artist. And the thing I liked about this is I really liked, I like paper, and it brought me back to like the feeling of fabric and sewing. And I also liked the fact that it was different. And that it was a way to carve a niche into doing a certain kind of art that was unique to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of really liked embracing that, and it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And I, you know, people look at them, they like, how do you do that? You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's really not that hard. And I really like to encourage young people. I learned from this process, there's a lot of math in art.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you're measuring it all out to get it right? Or?
Not measuring, but the angle you cut paper and the angle that you put it on the board shows whether it's going away or coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of that. But after doing 24 portraits, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of math in art.
Also, do you feel at all that collage is something that is maybe special to women artists or special to women in any way?
I haven't really thought about that.
No.
That's an interesting thought.
Well, a couple of things. One is, of course, you know, we all know about Hannah Hawke and Cut with a Kitchen Knife, and that there is a lot of, you know, feminist writing and thought around that work, and also Martha Rossler and other women who have, you know, for maybe lack of studio or for lack of other resources, went to the scissors and the paste, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, it was thought that Picasso and the Cubists had done the first collages when, I think it was just a couple of years ago, and I could be corrected on this, but I think it was the Morgan Library, found the first collages made, which were by Victorian women.
Okay.
Yeah. So it really is, you know, something that, I mean, if we're just talking about she, because she cares and what have you, that is maybe specific to us.
Well, I'm going to look into that. That sounds like a great, I love looking into history, you know, and that's why I like the original book. It was really great to hear the stories of all these different women artists in different venues, different disciplines, like a ballerina and mm-hmm. a sculptor. And
right.
Yeah.
Where did you get the title? Because she cares.
Well, I had a friend that I was working with, and how I kind of found the, I knew a couple of women who ran nonprofits when I started, but I went to the Business Journal list of nonprofits in the state, and I was working with a friend, Bonnie Gilchrist, who, oddly enough, I worked for like 28 years ago as a graphic artist.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be another reason why I like this technique, because, you know, I was schooled in graphic design.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came up with the idea together. You know, we were talking about, you know, how would our state be if there weren't these organizations that cared about
mm-hmm.
the people who needed help to change their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And then in one of the shows I had, which was kind of a private showing through one of the nonprofits, the director talked about my work, and she said, you know, Teresa's portraits are a lot like what we do. People come to us with many pieces of their lives kind of askew, and we help them craft a new picture and a new way to go. And that's why Teresa's work kind of reflects what we do.
Mm-hmm. So in this job that I have here, doing interviewing artists, especially mm-hmm. when I interview women artists, there is often a more lively conversation off the mic than one that is on the mic. And I've learned over years so many interesting things about, well, about art, but about women artists specifically and what they do, they divulge as time goes on. Have you found by doing this project, because you're meeting woman after woman, and I mean, I'm sure not just the women you're doing the portraits, but the people in the nonprofits, whatever, have you, I guess, been surprised or learned things that you never thought you would have, you know, privy to just by doing this project?
Yes, and it was really evident in the filming, because during the filming, I asked the women what was the spark that led them to their work, and did they have mentors? And I learned a lot about their personal stories, and I was very surprised, you know, to see that, you know, they had this difficulty or that difficulty, and now they're these powerful women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing that I like young people, when I go and talk to young people, actually, I did forget I had a show at the Middleman Jewish Community Center,
mm-hmm.
and I talked to some students there. And so my message is, if you have an idea, believe in it,
mm-hmm.
because you never know where
it'll go. Don't get talked out of it.
Yeah. Because, and then the other thing is, nowadays, the opportunities are a lot less. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, like one boy there had an idea to put a pet sticker on a window to let the firemen know that there's pets in there, you know, and it's a brilliant idea and right. you need to follow it through. And I think that, you know, that's the creative spirit that keeps needs to be nurtured for our future, because these kids are our future.
Well, you know, one thing too that you said at the beginning of the interview was you're talking about just women in art and how they we needed to know more about them and to put them more on the front burner of history. And the people weren't, you know, women weren't getting the fair, hadn't gotten the fair shake in a very long time. And you know what I find interesting about this project is by doing their portrait, these women. And then by having these exhibitions, especially one after another, or the meetings with the students, this kind of thing, you're writing history.
Oh, thank you.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're writing history. So this takes me to a book that I read recently, and it came out in the 90s, Women in Art by Judy Chicago.
Oh, I love Judy. She's great.
This book is incredible. This book is incredible. And one thing she says is, you know, we've made all this history and women have made all kinds of art that then doesn't get put into the history, though, doesn't get the formal canonization, right? And then what happens is that 10 years later, you have new women artists that are making the same work, like they don't know it's happened, okay? So it's very, she was saying, it's very important to write the history. And I really think that's something you're doing in this project, because you are talking about female leaders.
Thank you very much.
So
I feel honored.
It's an important thing that you're doing. It's funny. I'm just coming across this right now as we're talking. There was recently an article in the New York Times that talked about caring. Did you see this article?
No, I didn't.
Well, it was in the op-ed section, and they talk about how children are being raised to be happy. And to be more thinking of themselves and not quite so serving of others. And they talk about that actual happiness does come from caring. And they use that word over and over again. So it's, in some ways, it's riffing a little bit on this exhibition. I have one final question for you.
Sure.
I'm asked, I make art around women. My last show was, and I actually had several people come up and say, do you do men? So do you do men?
Sure.
Okay.
I do kids. I did get a commission from one of the shows, and I did a family of children.
Uh-huh.
So I did a boy and two girls. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do pets.
Oh, really?
I did
really?
My friend's dog and
uh-huh.
for a favor, and it was really fun, but it's a lot of hair, which means a lot of pieces.
Oh, right. You're cutting it all out.
I like doing the hair on people because, you know, it's a specific area and...
Uh-huh. All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Ava. Of course. Now, what's your next, like, event so we can tell people about that?
The next event is at the Unitarian Church.
And that's in October?
No, that's in September.
Oh, September. Okay.
The first Sunday after Labor Day.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be there the whole month. And I'll also be selling some of my own art as well.
Right, these pieces that you've made of women are not for sale, by the
way.
No,
and they will go to the charities,
whether
the money's raised or not.
And
so I think everything will work out brilliantly.
Right, so it'll either go to the nonprofits that they're at, or you're going to figure out some other way to like maybe raise money for those nonprofits through the sale of those pieces.
Correct.
All right. Okay, and also just to remind you again, you can see this work at the Outside Inn and at Friendly House, right?
Yeah, through the end of July.
Okay. Well, thanks, Teresa. Well, it was nice talking with you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Art Focus. My name is Ava Lake, and I'll be back with you next week.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series, which on Saturday, July 5th at 7 p.m. will show The Price of Sex. This feature-length documentary sheds light on the underground criminal network of human trafficking and the experiences of trafficked Eastern European women forced into prostitution abroad. The Price of Sex includes first-person accounts, as well as interviews with traffickers, clients, and anti-trafficking activists to expose the root causes, complex connections, and stark significance of sexual slavery today. Again, that's Saturday, July 5th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community Radio is looking for an IT contractor to work with our organization 15 hours a week at $25 an hour, providing on-site IT support as well as website maintenance support. Essential qualifications include at least 5 years of general IT network and server maintenance and website administration, experience with PHP, MySQL, experience in Drupal 6 and 7, ability to maintain rack-mounted server, and maintain a local area network of Windows XP, 7, and 8 workstations. Send a resume and cover letter addressing the above qualifications and the question, why KBOO is important, to hiring@kboo.org or drop it off for IT Hiring Team at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm/hiring.
Santa Muerte, or Saint Death, is pictured as a female skeleton in robes. Her shrines are found in Mexican prison cells and drug houses. She presides over the shadowy battleground of the war between the Gulf Cartel and Los Zetas. Hi, this is Per Fagring, host of Fight the Empire. Thursday, I'll be speaking with Michael Diebert, author of In the Shadow of Saint Death. That's Thursday, July 3rd at 9:30 a.m., In the Shadow of Saint Death on KBOO, your radio station.
Este